Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is April the 25th, 2013. So today we're going to talk about how to handle race day and game day and be mentally ready with your clients. And also the main issue, the main purpose, of course, for these calls is to answer your questions and connect with you and answer. You can ask anything about coaching or your business or marketing and or how to handle tough clients. So, yeah, first welcome your questions, and then we'll also I wanted to make an announcement that I was going to be, I've got my new TV show now, and so I wanted to interview each of you for my TV show, and we'll do it like, we use what's called Google Hangouts. It's free. It's like a Skype call, video conferencing, but it's even better, than much better than Skype, and so I'll just send you a instructions how to set that up. It's really simple, just like Skype. And so, yeah, if you can each send me a time, day and time that you can be interviewed, that's, maybe a couple possible times for this next, actually the week, starting the week of, I'll be away next week, but the week after that, which would be May the 6th, I'll be doing interviews then, the week of May 6th and May 15th, so and 20th. So just let me know. It just take about 15 minutes or so, and it's, the idea is to promote you and your coaching. And the video will be on my TV show here and up on YouTube and syndicated throughout the web. So I would love to have the opportunity to interview each of you about what you do specifically with as performing edge coach and mental training and. What you're, and what sports you're working with, and specifically how your uniqueness as a coach and what you bring to how you can help athletes to perform better. So just let me know a good time. You can email me with any days and times that are good for you, and we'll connect that way. So let me just check in with all of you guys. Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
That's good.
Busy.
Oh, great. Are you, let's see, you're in sort of between California and Nevada?
I'm in Newport Beach, and then I'm also in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Oh, Arizona, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Are you working with some athletes now, too?
I'm working with two baseball players right now, a shortstop and an outfielder.
Great. What are you doing with them?
I'm working on visualization on the pregame, what they're looking to do and how they're looking to carry that onto the field and translate it into after the game, what they did wrong and how they need to break down each ending, and more so on just getting their head wrapped around all the things coaches are telling them.
Uh-huh.
And just visualizing it before and after the game.
Oh, great.
And actually their batting averages have gone up about 50 points since starting with me about 2 weeks ago. So
wow.
It might be helping. It might be helping a little bit, I think.
Yeah, that's fantastic. If you could, have you gotten, can you get testimonials from them?
Yeah, I could. I could do that. I'm actually going to put them on, once I get the website going, I'm going to actually put a video of each one of them on there.
Yeah. So, I can show you how to use, through our interviews, with this TV show, you can, I'll show you how to use Google Hangouts. Have you heard of that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's great to be able to video people through that, because it's more clear, and it's through than Skype, and you're actually able to, because Google owns YouTube as well, you just hit this button that says enable broadcast, and you can then just broadcast it, and it'll be on the web and recorded automatically by YouTube, so it goes up on your YouTube channel right away within just a minute or two after you finish the interview. So it's fantastic that way, and it's easier to get I think, and it's more natural when you get testimonials to just interview someone. talk with them a little bit, as opposed to you can also have them, you can just go straight to them and, of course, and video them right there, like use your iPhone or something if you're
right
out there.
Right.
Yeah, that works too. Right there, because, of course, you're right there on the field. Okay. Batting average going up 50 points is really, that's what you want to get in a testimony of, is some specific results like that, what you're getting. So.
Yeah, you got to, that could be a couple hits, but, as long as they're improving, that's all they want.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see some results from it, and I told them they would.
Yeah, that's great. Are you doing it volunteer or charging them?
Both these guys, I'm just working out voluntarily right now. I haven't done too much to, try to get on top of the money situation with them.
Yeah.
It's my first two guys, so I just wanted to fill it out and see how it goes.
Right, that's great. Yeah, just to get that experience and get. It's really important to have a few people. Yeah, good testimonials on your...
Actually, I came up with a good idea this morning that once I start getting going with the clients that actually pay me is to do a lot of free clinics to little league teams, maybe 10-minute session on Saturdays with them, since they're all right there, usually at the field. There's a bunch of teams always right there down the street from me. So I figured I'd talk to the head of the little league and see if I could work that out. Just sit down with the team and, cause, coaches coach, and they coach, the fundamentals, but not too much of the mental part of the game.
Uh-huh.
So work with the little kids, and I do it with my son, and he's a lot better at it now. And we actually I lay down on the floor with him, and we look at the ceiling, and we close our eyes, and we talk about baseball and visualizing his swing. And he likes that a lot better than being out and sweating so much out in the field. So it works out better with him.
How old are they, the kids?
My son is, right now he's 7.
Uh-huh.
So he's playing baseball 24 hours a day, so. to relax, and he likes just laying there and thinking about it a lot more right now. I said, no rush, just relax a little bit. We don't need to go out and hit balls right now.
Right, yeah.
Let's work on the mental part of it. Let's work on your swing and what are you doing before the pitch and after the pitch.
Uh-huh.
But he's pretty young, and then my other son, he's playing soccer, so.
Uh-huh.
I got young kids, so nothing too much. Not too much pressure yet on them.
Uh-huh.
They put their own pressure on them. I tell them, don't worry about that.
Yeah.
Don't worry. You're too young to be pressuring yourself.
Yeah.
Have fun with it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's about it on the sports side, and then
okay.
Of course I got real estate, so that's taking up a lot of my time too right now.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Yeah. Do you have any questions for me?
I'll send you an email tonight. I'll send you an email with some other stuff, but no questions on this particular topic right now.
Yeah. Okay. But it's really thanks. Congratulations for with the work you're doing with the kids. It's great that you can have your son. You work with him as well as other kids, and using the visualization techniques, and you can actually do, an MP3 with them. I don't know if you've done
mm-hmm.
that, like recorded something, a mental training or a visualization. But you can actually do that on your iPhone. You can use Audacity. That program I talk about in the members area there. If you want to download that to your computer, or if you want something that's less just easier and quick to use. There's there's apps on your phone. There's one called Call Myna, C-A-L and Myna, M-Y-N-A-H. That's free. And there's a couple different ones on your iPhone. You can just look up apps for recording, voice recording, and then you could just record right there on your iPhone something for them, and then turn it into an MP3 file right there. So just a suggestion too,
right?
With what you're doing,
that might be good. I got a couple of professional coaches in the majors. I'm gonna have a couple meetings with about how they work with their athletes.
Yeah, and that way you, when you're doing work with them and doing mental training and visualization, you actually capture what you're doing and put it record it, so you turn it into a a tool that they can use over and over again. You could do it with one person, or you could do it with a whole group kind of thing, do a whole group visualization, and then send the MP3 out to the whole group, too. So, great. Okay, yeah, good work. I'm so glad that you're on the call today, Ryan, and that you can share what you're doing. That's fantastic. So,
I've been preoccupied with some other projects I've been working on, so it's good to be back on here.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I want to help motivate you here and get going and be able to start charging for your services, too, and get paid what you're worth here, too. Yeah. Okay, so great. Amy, are you there, too?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, I just wanted to check in with you. So how is it going with your work?
Things are going well. I have some exciting things lined up for the summer. I'm going to be doing working with the Pennsylvania Ballet School, the kids that are between the ages of about 11 to 18. And I'm going to be working with them for 5 weeks, twice a week.
Great.
And then I'm going to be working at a tennis camp. And this is going to be exciting because I did it last year, but this year they want me on the tennis court with the kids during match play, working with them. So I'm going to use a lot of things from the inner game of tennis. And I'm doing that, and I'm working with a golfer that's doing really well, winning a lot of tournaments regionally. And,
I didn't know you knew about golf.
Yeah, she approached me. She found me on my website and came over with her parents and interviewed me. And she's really one of the top golfers. She's being recruited by different colleges, and she's won her last two tournaments. So I'm having her do a lot of visualization. She had a great tournament in Hershey, Pennsylvania recently that she won, and I told her I wanted her to visualize the first 9 holes because that was the best part of her round, and go through, hole by hole, every shot, and set goals for her for this next tournament. So she's that's kind of fun doing that. And then I'm also going to be working with, we have a very big center here. Arthur Ashe started it. It's a tennis center, and it's turned into a program called Legacy. And it's very much of a tennis program as well as leadership program for kids. And they have all kind of mentoring and educational things. Mm-hmm. And I met with the director of the leadership program this morning. And he wants me to come in and start working with some of those kids doing sort of life skills, leadership type of workshops with them. So I'm excited about that. It's a little bit, it'll combine my life coaching background with the sports because they're all tennis players.
Yeah, that's right, because you're a life coach as well. Wow, so they want you to come in. What would you do with them? Do workshops, did you say?
I would do, yeah. The first workshop I'm going to do is a leadership workshop with them, and they're about between 14 and 18, and do some different exercises and sort of confidence building. And then if that goes well, to get more integrated into their program and work with them. It's a group of kids that have been together for the last 18 months, and they kind of develop them as a group and as leaders.
Is that all volunteer work?
I'm hoping that it's going to turn into something for money. The first one will be volunteer. But after that, if they integrate me into their program, I'm sure they'll be paying me to work with them. But it's a really good introduction because this guy that interviewed me has my same background. He was a competitive tennis player and is very much involved in tennis, but now they have him kind of connecting the two things together, the mentoring and the leadership qualities with the tennis program. And he's really trying to beef up the leadership part instead of the tennis because the tennis. So I'm hoping that it is going to turn into something where they would be paying me.
Yeah, that would be good. I'm trying to think because you're gonna be on the court with the kids this year, is what you were saying.
Yeah, that's a different location, but that's gonna be really cool. It's a whole different spin on what I can do, but I'm really gonna pull a lot of things from the Timothy Galway, the Inner Game of Tennis,
mm-hmm,
and the things
mm-hmm.
that I'm gonna be doing with them on the court. A lot of visualization and fewer, you know, the whole thing is not too many words and by images.
Right.
Yeah. I was trying to think because a lot of the parents will travel or go to the kids' matches or practices. I was trying to think how would you get more exposure? Because as a parent, I'd wonder who's this lady talking to my son or daughter. And
mm-hmm.
she seems like
well, that was the other thing is that we've also talked about is one of the biggest issues with the kids that compete in tennis tournaments is their parents and their body language, and it
mm-hmm.
makes their kids so nervous because it's just that one person out there competing. You know, these individual sports are rough for them when their parents don't realize the negative effect that their behavior is having on the kids. So that's another whole area of interest.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. You know, parents need to be taking classes on how to be in the audience.
I mean, I don't know what it's like, Dr. Joanne, for runners. I mean, because that's individual too. And if they can even see when they're in the middle of a race who's watching and what their parents are doing. But when a kid is playing a tennis match and in between points he keeps looking up, and, you know, the parent will go, ugh, or, you know, something, or roll their eyes, it has a terrible effect on the kids.
Yeah.
And it really makes them perform poorly.
Yeah, because the kids are looking right to their parents.
Yeah, they're looking at their coaches, and they're looking at their parents, and it's very, it's the exception that the parents are the kind of people that are just like, oh, okay, honey, it's fine, you know, you get the next one. And that's what everybody's trying to teach parents, is that you don't realize it's having the adverse effect.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a great topic. In fact, how to work with parents and coaches, too, can have that same problem.
Oh, right? Exactly, yep, it's both of them.
Yeah, and most coaches are really much more oriented toward negative feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And kids
like that coach at Rutgers. Did you hear that story about the basketball coach at Rutgers that got fired?
Yeah,
I mean that was ridiculous. He was really abusing his players and throwing things at them and abusing them emotionally and screaming at them. I mean, that was just a terrible example of what people put up with sometimes.
Yeah, it's sort of good that came out because it just really highlights how bad the situation is. And it was great that they he got fired served as an example of what goes on because. A lot of that, yeah, he was really externally expressing.
Oh, terrible. Well, it was the video that, you know, I think the athletic director and the president of Rutgers saw that made them realize, oh, my God, this is just out of control.
Yeah. That's all over YouTube now kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that behavior is just terrible.
Yeah, and so that's something, both of you, Ryan and Amy and other people in our program can work with, coaches, too, as well as kids, if they're open to that, you know, feedback. And, when the kids say that, so-and-so, my coach is just, rolling their eyes and I never get any positive feedback or, that's a good sign that, it's time to work with the coaches too, or parents. The frustrating thing is, some coaches might not be open to that or ready to that. They're kind of stuck in one style, but they I think it's something that you know, if you can work with, have, you know, after a while, if you're in an organization, you can learn to kind of have more power and more authority and more respect. It's something that you can really work with. Yeah, because kids just, like you say, Amy, they really want that. I mean, they're looking for approval, right? And Ryan, they're looking for a way to say, did I do that right, or was that okay? Or, you know, they just starve for that, you know, kind of positive attention. And most of the time, you know, they don't, the only time they hear from the coach or parents is if they screwed up. So one thing I teach kids is try to, how to, it's a problem to be addressed with the coaches and the parents, but with the kids, if the only one you can work with is the kid, it's like teaching him to create his own feedback system, you know, their own way to give themselves positive strokes, even if they're not getting it from their coach or parents.
Right, right.
So, you know, even be able to say to yourself, good job, you know, I did that right.
I'm dealing with a few issues over on the baseball team right now with a couple of younger kids, and it's interesting what parents will say to their children.
Yeah, what have you noticed? What do they say?
Well, my wife's Hispanic, and she's very fluent in Spanish, and we have a couple boys who are Hispanic, and their fathers speak them only in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, as a father, some of the other fathers don't understand what they're saying from the sidelines or from the bleachers. And my wife got in the car with me, and she goes, do you know what they're saying to their sons? And I go, no, I don't really, can't tell. The kid seems a little upset once in a while. And they're making the Rutgers coach look nice.
Really?
I was like, wow. Okay, so I don't know how to approach the father because I'm an intimidating guy, so I kind of just, I keep it low key, and I speak to my son. I actually communicate to my son on the field with whistles, when I whistle at him, and he knows that, hey, Dad's talking to me, and he'll cheat over a couple steps, or he'll know what I mean when I whistle at him at some point, but I don't know how to approach the father. Hey, you shouldn't talk to your son like that without having a conflict. So I talk to the son. I talk to him, the player, and I tell him, hey, don't worry about it. You're okay. This is how you need to handle the ball when it comes to you this way. So I got fathers speaking different languages to children that are doing okay. They're just, their fathers are trying to live through them through the sport. And I'm just like, oh, boy, this is going to be a tough one. You know, just, I wear sunglasses so other people don't see my eyes when I'm out there on the field, because I will make some faces, or I'll wear my hat down. So I talk to my son later after the game, but it's always positive because I had hard coaches on me, and the hard coaches were good. You know, they taught you to deal with some certain issues in life that I could put up with. This coach I had back in the 90s, this coach I got now in 2000, no problem. So sometimes having a coach that's hard but not abusive can be a good thing, but, you know, when fathers are saying certain words to their son, words are worse than having a basketball thrown at you, I feel. I mean, a basketball can be thrown at you and you can brush it off, but when somebody is saying certain things to you, I mean, I can't even say them on the phone. I couldn't even say them to my wife. I was like, she didn't say them either, but she gave me what the dad was saying to his son and calling him. I was like, oh boy, I need to figure out how to talk to the dad about this, and I haven't figured out how to do it yet.
Well, what was he saying to the son? Or if you can paraphrase,
he's calling him names. He's just saying, "Hey, you're playing like something, and you're just you threw the ball like a such and such." And I was just like, "Oh, the kid's only 7."
Yeah,
I mean, and the kid's really good too. I'm like, "Oh my goodness, okay."
I think you need to learn Spanish, Ryan.
Learn the bad words anyway.
That's the answer.
Yeah.
I know some of the bad words. My wife says don't say those. But nobody will ever. I mean, I go, honey, give me the definition of that. So I don't say it anymore. And she won't do it.
Yeah, you need to have a little Spanish dictionary right there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some characters out there. And, you know, I put sunglasses on so nobody else sees my eyes in case I do make a bad expression on a play. And then there's a reason I'm not a coach, per se, one of the main coaches on the team, because I am a little aggressive when it comes to baseball because I played so many years. And, you know, I used to slide and take people out. I believe in throwing at somebody if they stay in the box too long. I believe in honoring the history of baseball the way it was meant to be played. You know, you stand in the box and watch your home run, you might get one up and in next time. You know, you don't stand there and show the pitcher up, or you don't run into somebody because you're supposed to slide at second when you're turning a double play. So you might get some retaliation from another teammate. So I do kind of believe in that kind of system of baseball. It will police itself, and the umpires need to call balls and strikes and outs, and we'll handle the rest. So I wear my sunglasses, and I communicate through whistles with my son. Not like an actual whistle, but he knows, hey, Dad's talking to me, and I'll just give him a hand signal, like, back off a little bit or move this way a little bit. It might help. I don't ever say anything. I do keep an even. Everybody goes, you never say much. And you just clap and say, good job to everybody. And that's the way I should always am. You know, I don't yell things out. I just can't. I saw a lot of that growing up, and I just can't see. Dads drive me crazy when they do that. I'm just like, okay. Got to keep an even keel. Got to keep an even keel. Game's up and down. You're going to have bad days, you're going to have good days. It's baseball. You only got to be good 3 times out of 10. You know, you're going to strike out. You're going to strike out plenty of times. You got to take, you know, you're going to drop balls. You're going to get, you know, you're going to get pitchers that throw in on you. You got to handle that and just walk away. You don't need to go charging the mound or get upset at it. It's part of the game. You just got to keep an even keel. And parents are very hard to deal with. They will push their kids so hard. It's just, you know, I'm pushing them a little bit, but pushing to the point where you're calling them names and belittling them. And it's a little challenging. And, you know, I'm a big guy, so I don't like to get in people's insight. You know, I don't like to have confrontation, let's just put that one. So I just kind of like, okay. I'll make note of that.
It would be great if there was a way to keep parents, those kind of parents, out of the game.
Yeah, it would be. And, you know, harder coaches, you know, coaches that are hard on you, certain level are good. They're good. But when they do that type of stuff, it's throwing basketballs at players, that's not good. I mean, I had coaches make me run until I threw up, and, you know, you're late 2 minutes to warm up. You're going to run, and they're going to yell at you and blow a whistle in your ear or smack your helmet with a whistle. And that stuff is when they start throwing baseballs at you on purpose, then, you know, a baseball could sail out of your hand as a player and get them back for it. I was very surprised that the basketball team put up with that type of abuse. So it was interesting that not too many of them stepped up and said something. But I caught a couple episodes of ESPN when a couple basketball players said he never did that to any key players that were aggressive. So that was interesting. He kind of picked his victim to who he was going to throw a basketball at and who he was going to treat like that. He knew what players not to push too hard because they would go after him physically. So that was kind of, okay, so these guys are kind of a goofball, to be polite words.
Yeah.
You know, you got to treat everybody, you got to treat the aggressive player the same as the less aggressive player, and you just got to make them work together. You don't throw basketballs at people. As a coach, I'd be worried more about injuring him, because now I threw a basketball. Great, he's out of the game.
Yeah.
Because he was throwing at some points, he was throwing at their ankles. And, you know, that's dangerous right there. As a basketball player, you're always hurting your ankles.
Yeah.
But that's a little off topic, so we can get back on the topic. But, you know, I was wondering, the reason I asked about how, and I'm about making money for you. I didn't know if you could put a banner at the tennis tournament that you're volunteering at to have your name or something and your website down there, or just your name and who you are and a phone number so you could promote yourself at that tennis tournament that you're going to be volunteering at for those kids.
Yeah, you're asking Amy?
Yeah.
Yeah, Amy.
Yeah.
I don't know if you could do a banner or something.
Maybe that's a good idea.
I just want to see you make some. I want to see you because as a parent, I'd be like, "Who's this lady talking to my kids?" Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, I'm hoping that I'll get integrated into their program because it's a really good leadership program that they have there that goes on year after year. And if the first workshop goes well and they like it, then he said, you know, we'll see about doing more things. And
okay.
Yeah, and you find out if they have this leadership program already in place. They're probably paying staff or presenters to put it on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of just find out what their budget is for that and what they're paying people already. And organizations have different kinds of budgets too. If you just say you're a speaker, that's one kind of budget. They might not have a budget for speakers per se, but ask what other budgets they have, like an education budget, a training budget, materials budget, and all of that or a marketing budget. There's all kinds of, money in different kinds of, areas where they could pay you. So if you kind of bring those up, they may be creative and come up with other ways. Yeah. So that just some ideas there.
That would be better.
Yeah. Or come up with call it a class kind of thing. That you're offering a course in leadership. So, and then do you have a list of sort of benefits or what outcomes, what you would hope they could, because oftentimes if they're considering you or for paying you, they want to know, well, what are we going to get for our money? What benefits would we see from your leadership program?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So just some ideas, Amy, do you have some thoughts off the top of your head, what you'd want to teach and what they could learn? What benefits they would get?
A lot of it would be confidence building in general. And I've got some good resources for a couple different programs because this was one of my ideas a couple years ago. There was a program in Michigan called Reaching Higher, and the woman wanted me to start it in Philadelphia, but it was part of a school district, and it's really difficult to get into the district and take the kids out of school for a program, so it was very hard to get it going. But this would be different because this is all after school. So I've got a lot of materials as far as being an athlete and being a leader and things like that, kind of developing their speaking, the ability to speak, to be in front of people, what are their greatest attributes as a person, what are their values, things like that to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And life skills. How do they make themselves a better citizen in general?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a huge area, of course, that you've been trained in. Yeah, you could develop a whole curriculum around that kind of thing. So
yeah, that's a really good idea, because if the first workshop goes well, then what I could do is say, all right, well, I'll make up a course for athletes and leadership, kind of a combined program.
Yeah. And you could do it... Yeah, once you have a course or a curriculum like that, then you can apply it to many areas. You can have it be something for, that you could use for tennis, for golf, for ballet, all those things. You can just, have it repurpose it so that same material gets used for any group that you work for. I know Pam Gunblack, in our group, is of our coaches, the one that she's in California, but she's from Vermont, and she was flying back to Vermont.
Oh, right.
Sort of eight volleyball workshops, or soccer, no, soccer, yeah. And she's, got paid really well for all those workshops. And so she's got this whole curriculum she developed for 8 weeks, or flew back there and did a one or two day workshop each weekend for 8 weeks or so. Now she's got a whole curriculum together. She said training she can use over and over again for many things. So if you can think of it as, something that is, you're developing it for, a core sort of core knowledge that you can keep using again and again, then you can it doesn't seem like so much work thinking, oh, I've got to do all this work, but if you can think of it as like you're building an asset, really,
mm-hmm.
that you can use over and over. Yeah, that's great. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, good. Do either of you have any questions for me, too, while we're chatting?
No, I'm good.
Okay. So, yeah, let me know if you do, and let's talk a bit about the, just getting race ready or game ready, and I think, let's say a lot of times athletes will come to you because they're, they've got an event coming up, whether it's tennis or baseball or basketball, let's say it's only 1 week away or 3 weeks or a month away, and their whole season or their whole training boils down to this next event, and often they'll call you for that specific reason that they've got a race coming up or something, and they're really, the nervousness starts building. They can feel this pressure mounting, and they often feel physically prepared, but they don't feel, they have no idea how to prepare mentally. And so, you can ask them, how do you react in demanding situations? If you've prepared mentally and physically, then you can help them to be really confident about that, even if they're feeling pressure. And you want to be, create the type of athlete that thrives on pressure, thrives on a close race or a tight match. So it's something that you can really work on no matter what sport you're in. And I think that pressure is something that we put on ourselves when we're not prepared and when you don't have faith in what you're doing or you fear the unexpected. And when you're working with athletes, now you can give them a choice. You can say you can look forward to the challenge of the next race or game. You can test your limits, or you can just cringe in front of it and be really scared. And so, like when I talk to my clients, whether it's that just getting started, or whether it's going to the Olympics, I think my advice is always to welcome that pressure. And the more prepared you are, it's kind of like a continuum. I think the more prepared you are, then the less pressure you feel. So you want to look at it, the race or the game as an opportunity to shine, to perform well, celebrate your fitness. And if you embrace the competition and thrive on it, you're going to be amazed at how successful your clients will be when the situation really gets tight. You want them to have the edge and know there's just as much pressure on everyone else, and your clients will know exactly how to handle it. Like I have a parent that just called yesterday, and they have it's a 10-year-old. Their 10-year-old son he's in baseball actually, and he does really well with outfielding and just does fine. But it's batting, as you know, Ryan. That situation is always, it's a whole different mental game, right? They feel the kid is just totally cringes when it comes to getting in the batting box. He can do well when practice, but then when the game comes, it's a whole different, it's almost like he gets into a different mental state and just feels the total pressure on himself. So that's why they were calling me to help with that situation. I was going to start working with him this week, And, you know, working on just being able to create that same mindset that he has when he's practicing, you know, bring that right into the game. So he's just as relaxed, just as focused, and can perform just as well. So, yeah, when I'm working with athletes preparing for an important competition, I often hear, you know, what athletes say about performance anxiety and self-doubt, and they have difficulty relaxing. You know, as the event draws, you know, gets closer and closer, there's usually athletes are focused so much on the physical elements of a race, they forget to prepare emotionally for the real race inside their mind. And so when the event day arrives, usually something comes up they weren't mentally prepared for, and so that can throw the whole game plan off. And so you want to, you know, be able to prepare, try to have your athletes go through all the different possible scenarios if you can, and be able to be prepared for anything that could happen. Did someone just join us? Somebody else? When I hear a sound, usually someone either joins us or someone went off the line one way or the other, I guess. Anyway, let me know if you're new on the line, just you can introduce yourself. Some of the top 10 things that you can ask your athletes what their excuses are, what their mistakes are. I think that's an important question to ask before you work with them. You know, on game day or race day, what's gone wrong before? Sometimes, you know, things like they found themselves worrying so much about the race or their game outcome that they were, you know, obsessing about it that they couldn't sleep all night. Or they were so, you know, found themselves ready for the race physically but not mentally. And so, you know, just not dealing with or thinking, oh, if it rains, I'm going to be really not do really well. Or if so-and-so shows up at the race, I won't be able to, you know, race as well. Or there goes first place, now I'll be in second place. That kind of thing, that kind of thinking goes on a lot. And I just wanted to kind of go through a sequence with you about the different things to do, you know, like say 3 weeks before an event, and then as it gets closer, 3 days before, and then the night of. So 3 weeks before an event, you know, you'll have athletes coming to you asking, well, how do I mentally prepare for this thing that's coming up? And I just want to emphasize to you that each person is very individual. Each person is very different, and so there's no one thing, no one particular plan, but we can create a kind of a general sequence of things that you need to do, and then the value for you as a performing edge coach is that you can individualize it for each person. So I think there's no such thing as starting too early. Some people say, well, should I start mentally training? A lot of people think, well, the night before the race or the game, but actually, you know, more like a month before is really good, or 3 weeks before, because that's when the anxiety starts coming on. So I tell people you need to be practicing the mental training techniques as an ongoing part of your training. That's the ideal way. It's not just waiting before a particular huge event, but just be doing this as a regular part of your training. Right before you go to bed at night, you can be making visualizations that they can be listening to, and giving your athletes, you know, mental training homework. And so when the competition arrives, you're just putting on the finishing touches. And so a good time to begin, you know, specific mental preparation, let's say for a particular race or game that's coming up, is like maybe 2 or 3 weeks prior to an event. And the main objective there would be to, in this phase, is to build confidence by mentally rehearsing the race or the game in its entirety. You know, Amy, like you were saying, you go through different specific parts of the game or race, or Ryan, you want to use the tools of, you know, that we've talked about in the Your Performing Edge book and our program here of, you know, like the 3 P's of Your Performing Edge: positive images and power words and present focus. And use use those tools that we've been talking about. And spend, you know, say, have your athletes spend 10 minutes each night before bedtime doing some relaxation and mental imagery of their upcoming event. Or if it gets, but you want to ask each athlete too, if it gets them too excited so that they can't sleep at night, then maybe it's better to do it early in the morning. And they could just, before going to sleep, they could just relax thinking of maybe their favorite, some past favorite performance that they've done, and visualize that so that they're, you know, you want them to be able to sleep really well at night and just focus on the positive, some kind of positive outcome. So you want to build, and you want to build on their past successes in training, capture. And so you go back and look at your logbook. If you can have them look at the logbook of things that they've done well, if they're keeping a logbook. If not, you can have them start keeping a logbook and try to remember back, you know, say the last 3 or 4 weeks, what their best training and competitions have been, so they can write those down and have those memories and images right in their mind. So you want to have them build on their past successes, capturing those feelings of fluidity and strength and power and effortlessness, and, you know, have them experience themselves as really being composed and, you know, competent, focused. So you want to include, if you're doing visualizations for them, you know, include a kind of, you try to simulate all the different things that might come up, the different possibilities that might happen during your event. Say, ask your athletes to create their own top 10 list. Okay, so what if it's gonna, what if it's, you know, what if you get, what if it's raining, what if the weather's, or if it's really windy, what are you gonna do? Prepare for that. What if you're not feeling, you know, real energetic that morning? How do you handle that? What if you got something isn't quite, what if you got some negative thoughts going through your mind? How to handle that? So have them come up with, you know, maybe top 10 things that they might feel that might trip them up, and then come up with 10 the different ways to handle those things, so they can respond, your clients can respond to those the unexpected things in a really good way, being able to handle any circumstance. So that's 3 weeks before the race, and then 3 days before the event. Now the majority of your preparation's been done. So usually at this point, depending on what event it is and what sport, you start to taper physically, and so there's little you can do physically at that point to improve your performance. But there's a lot. Athletes really find it difficult switching gears and allowing the body to rest, and the best use of your time with them during this period is to train mentally, which can be a significant difference in the outcome. So as a performing edge coach, you might find yourself, you might want to work with your athlete more often, you know, as it gets closer to their event. And so, like when I was at the Olympics, I would work with my athletes every day, it would be once a week before that, when it got to be time for the Olympics or for a major competition, I'd be working with them every day on the phone, and so or there, and so it really makes a huge difference. They start to really look up to you to be the person that they kind of like your. Not only a performing edge coach or mental training coach, but also kind of as their confidant, to be able to ask you questions and just to be able to vent and talk about all the things that are going on in their life. And that's okay too, I think, to have somebody that they can feel that confident about. So athletes, I think, you know, the best use of your time with that athlete is to help them train mentally, and that can make a significant difference in the outcome. And there's some vital concerns that need to be addressed, I think, in order for you to do, for your athletes to do their best. As they're reducing their physical training by tapering, you want to increase the time, you know, you think of it like a cross, like if you're looking at a chart, the line would be going down for physical training because they're tapering and resting, but the line goes up, you know, diagonally in terms of time spent in mental rehearsal. So you don't want to wait till the last minute to do all your mental training. You want to be gaining and gaining greater control of your environment. So, like with kids, maybe if there's a way that they could rest a little bit more, reduce their workload, so you can allow yourself to really internally focus on the job ahead and feel really rested. And so you want to have that sense of contained excitement where you feel eager and yet under control. With adults, you know, we tend to say, oh, God, like for a marathon, I'm tapering for the race. Now I don't have to do that much. Now I'm going to got all this energy. I'll go clean my house and do all this extra stuff instead. But they end up, you know, using too much energy doing other things. So you want to have your athletes try to avoid that and try to just rest more and not use that energy, not waste the energy doing too many other things. Because you want to be storing energy, so when the right time comes, when you give the word, you let your body explode into action and just do really well in your sport. So that's 3 days before, and then 3 weeks before, 3 days before, and then the night before your event, that's when the real focusing needs to begin, and that's when people mess up the most, actually. Oftentimes they sabotage the experience by not eating the right kind of things and not getting enough sleep. So you want to take time to develop a pre-race ritual or pattern that you carry out in some way before the event. So ask your athletes if they already have a pre-race or pre-game ritual or pattern, what they already do that's working. Some athletes have that and some athletes don't. And so if they don't, then you can help them to develop that. If they do have a pattern, you can help them to refine it. Or just keep the things that are working and throw out the things that aren't. Because I think a familiar pattern, they have something they do the same way every time. It reduces anxiety and it helps you feel more prepared. You think, okay, even if it's something like, you know, that seems superstitious, like I always wore these blue shorts the night before important races, have them wear the blue shorts. Just helps you to, you know, it's familiar and it's something that helps athletes to feel like they're a sense of in control, and it minimizes that fear of forgetting something at the last minute. If you know, okay, I always have this routine, this always works. So it's just good to have that routine of some sort. Find out what that is and write it down. When you're in the session with the client, actually write down their pre-race or pre-game routine, what it is that they do or what they would like to do. So here's some of the things that you could include as a pre-game strategy, pre-race strategy. One is a quiet time. You know, take 10 minutes to do abdominal breathing and mentally rehearse your game or race right before you go to bed or during the day. And another thing is having visual models. So you want to watch. I think that's really important and very powerful to take a video, you know, just go on, you could, if they have videos of themselves performing really well, then you can have them watch those videos. Could be just even 5 minutes each night before they go to bed, or if they have extra time, you know, for a half an hour or so, you know, watch, let's say, like Amy, if you've got somebody playing tennis, watch a good game of your tennis playing, or it could be yourself, or it could be of a role model. You know, in tennis, watching Serena Williams play a great game, as someone that whose form you really like, you can watch that and have your athletes see themselves in that role, doing those same kinds of things as that athlete is doing. So, you can do that, and then if they have a video, you can also go on YouTube. You know, now that we've got YouTube, you can just look up virtually anything, any sport, and see just examples of great performances there. So they can be watching those. And then you want to just expose your mind. You have your athletes have that good form for 10 minutes before bedtime and then incorporate that into their mental imagery exercises. And that fluid motion of, you know, experienced athletes will gradually get programmed into their brain and into their muscles. And then another technique is for the night before is just pre-race triggers, you know, or game triggers. When something's a trigger for anxiety, you want to turn it into a signal for relaxation. So anything that they that gets them nervous, just allow it to move toward relaxation. For example, if something, you know, just someone's voice or something is a trigger for anxiety, then just be able to relax and just say, just let it go, and make that, whatever it is, make that a signal to relax and let go.
Dr. Joanne, I hate to interrupt. I have to leave now because I have a meeting at 2:30
okay.
at a tennis club, and I'm going to have to get going right now.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Amy, for coming. Really
thank
appreciate
you
it.
So much. I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, good. Okay, you too. I know, with our mothers and all, we've got something in common.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, great. Good luck with your, I'm so excited for you with your ballet and your tennis and your golf. You're doing fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. It's exciting.
Yeah, great. Thank
I enjoyed
too.
The call. Thanks for your help. Bye, Ryan.
Okay. Yeah, I heard a ding. Maybe he left. I'm not sure. So
okay.
I'll go ahead and finish anyway the recording.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much.
Sure. Have a good day.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye. So we'll just go with distractions. You know, you want to watch, you can have your athletes watch a light comedy or an inspirational movie to divert their attention from the race. You can have the right, another, so, you know, just watch something funny. YouTube is a great place, too, or they can, you know, bring a, if they're traveling somewhere, have them bring a DVD of a comedy they can watch. That's a great way to relax the night before a competition. And then the right clothes. You want to just wear the clothes that, you know, sometimes the athletes like to wear the same clothes they wore when they had their best game or their best race. So whatever makes you feel successful, you can have your athletes, you know, give them a winning feeling that way. Maybe they just went to a store and or at the expo before the race and bought something special there. They could wear that. And then the next tip is eating smart. This is one way that athletes really sabotage themselves is not eating well. So you want to maintain your regular eating program. Eat familiar foods that work with you at a scheduled time. You don't want to experiment with new or spicy, you know, foods that you're not sure about, that's for sure. And a couple other things are just environment. Find the right environment that works for you. Be around your friends or being alone, whatever makes you feel more at ease. Create the right environment that works for you. And a pre-race checklist. Just arrange for, you know, just have this whole checklist there so that you've got it all ready to go. You set the alarm. You arrange for your travel. You have your athletes develop a list of things to bring, to do. You know, like if it's a race, bring your race number, fill your gas tank, you know, pack the water, sports drink, shoes, bring pre and during and post-race clothing and your food. You know, all those things that you need, just to have that checklist, and then they use it over and over again for each competition. And then just a couple other things. For the night before, just remind your athletes that nervousness is okay. You can not get, you know, just don't get anxious, nervous about being nervous. It's perfectly natural to be anxious before a competition, and so you let it be your friend. But it's so some nervousness is unavoidable. It might be actually contribute to your best performance. You know, you can say, have your athletes say to themselves, okay, these pre-race jitters, these pre-game this anxiety is just an indication I'm psyched and I'm ready to go. So just kind of let it go and be excited about it. Let it use it as your best energy. And so I just kind of say, okay, nervousness is just fine. Means something special is going to happen here. And then the last thing is just the right, you know, do whatever makes you feel good. Have that right energy to achieve that emotional, physical high for the race. So you can maybe call a good friend that gets you excited, play favorite music. You can compete in a project or take a jacuzzi or massage. You want to avoid activities that are going to make you tired or upset or depressed or negative. Just stay with positive people, you know, avoid scary movies, that kind of thing. You want to just keep with relationships, the people that make you feel good. So we've got what to do 3 weeks before and 3 days before and the night before the race or the game, how to thrive on pressure. And there's also, I have some tips for that game morning. We'll go over those maybe next time in our call, which would be, the next call will be May the 9th. It's always the second and fourth Thursday of the month. So May the 9th at the same time at 10 o'clock Pacific, 1 o'clock Eastern. And thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today. And we look forward to our next call on May the 9th. We'll talk to you soon. If you have questions, feel free to email me. Talk to you soon. Have a great day. Bye now.
Bye. Thank you, Doctor.
Oh, bye, Ryan. Oh, I didn't know you were still there, Ryan. Oh, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. Yeah, that was great sharing with your baseball. That is excellent.
Yeah, I didn't want to overstep, but I wanted to say a little something, and I wanted to make sure she I want to make sure Amy's, you know, shooting to make some living off that and get her name out there when I said something about putting a banner up for advertising.
I think that's a great idea, Ryan. Excellent, yeah.
I mean, as a dad or a mom, I'd be like, okay, she's maybe not one of the instructors, but who is she and why is she talking to my child or what's going on? And then you also got to figure, you know, when I put my kids in the sports or baseball, I always figure I'm a money type of guy, so I always figure, okay, you know, some sports are a lot more expensive. Then you got to include the meals. My kids are pretty big, so everybody goes, well, you feed them. I go, oh, you know, I feed them this and this, and we really stay away from the junk food. And, you know, they eat healthy, and they always have been eating healthy, so that's why they're a little bit bigger than some of the kids that just eat junk food. And they work out, and they go running with me once in a while. So it's, you know, I always figure, okay, you know, you're going to play golf, you're going to spend some money playing golf. If your son or kid wants to, their daughter wants to play golf, you're going to spend a lot of money. So what's a little bit more money for an instructor to work on their mind and their, you know, their emotional part of the game and their mental part of the game?
Yeah.
It all plays into it. And then, you know, it's the same as I'm in the bodybuilding. So, you know, if I know I got to get ready for, say, the summer, I know I got to eat a certain amount of food and it's going to cost a certain amount of money.
Yeah.
Same for a bodybuilder who, you know, I have some guys that compete that I know really well, and I didn't know that you had to stand in front of the mirror for so long and it actually comes down to the right lighting. And they actually pay somebody $150 every week to go to this special place where they have this special lighting that imitates the stage lighting. And I'm like, you pay $150. I mean, it's a little pricey for a light bulb, but
yeah.
To stand underneath the right light and have him judge your... I can understand him have the coach of posing help you pose, but the right lighting, I didn't know the lighting really affects the way you pose. I mean, obviously the shadows, you know, will make you look bigger or smaller, but you have to figure, okay, $150 here, $50 here. If I'm putting $4,000 into my meal plan, what's another $150 for the right lighting to win on the stage?
Exactly.
So, I just want her to realize, you know, hey, see if you can get a little banner up there. Even if the banner is the same color as the backdrop, at least have your name stick out with white letters, and at least your phone number, maybe your phone number or a website. I don't want it to be too, you know, too aggressive, but just something to say, hey, this is what I do, and maybe, because, you know, the kids' parents are going to want to spend some money. I almost fell over backwards when my dad told me what he paid for my sister's softball lessons. I was like, whoa. Three lessons a week at $600, I could teach her how to hit. That's
yes,
a lot of money.
$200 of per shot. Right?
Yeah, I was like, and that's Newport Beach for you.
Yeah. So
I was like,
yeah,
okay.
You can, so you can see what people are already paying exactly for other lessons, and say, I can do that. You know, match.
Yeah.
That.
I don't like teaching, you know, sports to people, not my children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just a little too aggressive, so it's hard. Or I don't get, you know, it's hard for me to. I used to be a trainer when I was playing baseball professionally. I used to be a trainer for people, but as you know, it's hard to we're all about going 100% all the time when we're training.
Yeah.
And when you go to the gym, and you've got a person who can't lift 10 pounds for 15 minutes, you're like, well, why are you here? I mean, I can't push you.
Yeah.
You have to want it. So it's hard for me to teach people how to do certain things. So teaching them how to do the mental part of the game, that's more my style. I can do that where I don't have to be physical with them, actually.
Yeah.
Because I could get a little too aggressive on hitting baseballs and tracking down baseballs and running the right patterns. You know, I have to take a step back and let them have fun. If you're having fun, go for it. You know, you want to have to want it inside yourself. And you're going to have to push yourself. But here's the trick to do it mentally.
Right. Yeah. Right. I totally agree.
So it's hard. People go, how do you train so much? Or how do you go for a run? I go, that's just, and you know, I played baseball for 8 hours a day. If I can't put 2 hours of hard work in the gym or out for a run, then I feel like I didn't do much with the day. You know, if I got to get up at 3 a.m. so I can go work out, mm-hmm. don't interrupt the rest of my family's life, so be it. I might be a little tired around 9 o'clock at night, but who cares? It's 9 o'clock at night. Most people aren't. I'm not 20. I don't need to be out partying until 12 and 11 or 2 o'clock in the morning. 10 o'clock rolls around, I can go to bed, and I'll be fine.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's, I just want to, you know, I was thinking about even putting on a T-shirt, getting some T-shirts made with just my name on it or something. So when I'm out on the field, somebody goes, who I am, what I'm doing, why I'm here. I'm not some crazy dad or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I look fairly young, so it's,
yeah.
Like, what are you, 28? I'm like, no, I'm not 28. I'm not going to tell you how old I really am, but I'm not 28 anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I stopped counting my birthdays at 28.
Yeah. Okay, well, great talking with you, Ryan. I have to run.
Okay, I'll let you go. I'll talk to you later.
You can send me an email with your updated information.
Yes, I got that the other day. For some reason, they mailed me a new one without even telling anybody.
Okay.
Arizona had a bunch of hacking going on, so I guess Wells Fargo sent a bunch of stuff out.
Okay.
To everybody. Okay?
Yeah, send me your new information. That'd be great. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks
I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Have a great day.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.